Welcome to In the Studio, with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums.
You're welcome. Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, an informal look at the Grammy Award-winning album of the year 1985 from Phil Collins. And there's no jacket required.
It's that normal background that I think enables me to, A, relate in a very simple style, lyrically, to most people. And also, I begrudge, and I actually get quite angry when people sort of say, well, he's a rock star, how would he know what's going out on the street? How would he know what it's like to feel homeless? I don't believe you have to be homeless to understand how bad it can be.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
30 years ago this month, Phil Collins' star went into supernova, absolutely astonishing the entertainment world. It was not the first time that we had underestimated his considerable talents. That would have been 10 years earlier, when Phil Collins emerged from behind the drum kit of the British progressive rock band Genesis in 1975 to write and sing when original frontman Peter Gabriel left. By February 1985, Collins had led Genesis to their biggest-selling album and tour to date. Phil had recorded and released 2 solo albums with a hit on each, and possibly most telling of all, Phil Collins had written and sung 2 non-album hit singles as well. The movie title song to Against All Odds, which went all the way to number 1, and the duet with Earth, Wind & Fire singer Philip Bailey on Easy Lover. Since he bounded out from behind the Genesis drums to occupy center stage, Phil Collins repeatedly surprised us with his enormous talent for writing, singing, playing, and producing others, such as Eric Clapton's 1985 Behind the Sun album. Collins' music has the utmost mass appeal, with Phil himself maintaining a matter-of-fact, accessible populist profile. According to Phil Collins, it's in keeping with his English upbringing.
Well, I kind of came from a very normal, very average family. I mean, my mum and dad and my brother and sister, we lived in Middlesex, outside the outskirts of London. And I went to normal schools. And eventually, when I was 14, I got a theatrical job because my mum at that point had started running a little agency for kids. And I did the Artful Dodger. And at that point, I went to drama school. And my life changed a little bit there. I sort of started going for more acting jobs and all kinds of things to do with that area. I mean, you know, catalogue, mail order catalogue, modelling and that kind of stuff.
No
and,
kidding.
And then because I've been playing drums since I was 5 years old, so that was really my big love. And as soon as I could actually get out and about, I started, I ditched the acting and went professional. But my background really was very normal. My dad worked in the City of London for 40 years before he died, and my mum says she ran this agency. My brother's a successful cartoonist in London, and my sister runs her own agency and a health sort of salon, if you like. So we're all kind of pretty normal people, you know?
We'll be right back. The ever-popular number one hit, Sue's Studio, from Phil Collins' 1985 third solo album, No Jacket Required. When Phil was growing up, class distinction was very much a reality of British life. When he joined Genesis with Mike Rutherford, Tony Banks, and Peter Gabriel, Phil Collins was aware of that stratified social class.
I always thought that I was middle class because we were slap in the middle. But of course, once you start, that's to say we weren't working class. I mean, we weren't kind of, we didn't have a lot of problems, but then at the same time, we weren't very rich or wealthy. So, but of course, later in life, you find out the actual middle class is actually what I would have considered upper class. So I guess I was part of a working class family. But Mike and Tony and Peter Gabriel all went to a public school, which in England means it costs an arm and a leg, and I guess what you'd call that here a private school.
Yes, right.
And their upbringing was very different to me. They were almost at the tail end of a generation that were bred as officers and gentlemen at these schools. So when I joined the band, I was kind of coming from a very precocious sort of drama school background, where you sort of, you know, you took life very day by day, as opposed to these other guys. And I think that they were desperately trying to shake off all the things that they'd been conditioned to think and believe and to be like. And here I was, someone that actually managed to do that. And I think I was class clown for quite a while, you know.
Phil Collins' hit songwriting ability was first evident on the 1980 Genesis album Duke with the song Misunderstanding, a breakthrough for the venerable progressive rock outfit. But before Genesis could muster a follow-up album, Phil Collins' personal life was threatening his tenure in Genesis.
Then my marriage broke up, and then I sort of said I was leaving to go and live in Vancouver. And the guy said, hang on, don't leave. Let's just put things on ice for a bit. We'll do our solo albums. Now, when they had finished their solo albums and I'd come back from Vancouver with nothing having changed in regard to my personal situation, I had a lot more time and energy for the group because it was something for me to do, you know, and my marriage hadn't repaired itself. So I was looking for things to channel my energies into. And with the solo albums, having used up Tony and Mike's material, we were stuck without a lot of stuff. I had my face value stuff that no one was going to have. That was me. I did play everybody a few things. I mean, Tony Banks claims I never played them in the air tonight, otherwise they reckon they would have done it. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh, Lord. And I've been waiting for this moment for all my life.
Oh, no.
That was a huge hit for Phil Collins from his very first solo album, Face Value. Heartbroken and needing an outlet to occupy his time, Phil Collins purchased some basic recording equipment and installed it in a spare bedroom of his house in Guildford. For the first time in his life, he recorded alone.
I had recorded everything on cassette, as I said earlier, you know, and this was just like eight-track cassettes. I mean, it's just if we ever we wanted to use anything, we could do. Because I was intending to use my demos, you know, for Face Value. I'd quite like being the engineer. And I'd always been in charge of the tapes, you know, with Genesis. I was put the like two microphones, one. I had, you know, great sound on some of the cassettes I've got. Better than the albums, really. And this 8-track stuff was just me experimenting and seeing if I could capture on 8-track and therefore usable format.
Originally an unused outtake from the Face Value solo album called How Can You Sit There, Phil Collins' 1984 theme to the movie Against All Odds went to number one in America, number two in the UK, sold over a million copies, won a Grammy Award for Best Male Vocal within days of the release of his third solo album in February 1985. Entitled No Jacket Required, that album was co-produced by Collins and Hugh Padgham. With a wink, Phil reveals why Hugh Padgham was the right person with whom to work.
Well, he has the drums loud. It's as easy as that. No, it's not quite just that. I was obviously first off very impressed with the drum sound, you know, that we got together on the Peter Gabriel's third album. And we hit it off very well. And I produced Face Value and Hugh engineered it. He came in with Genesis. We have three minds in Genesis that we know exactly what we want to hear. Hugh came in as an engineer, but more than just an engineer. Assistant producer, if you like, if you've got to give someone a term, I guess that's probably better than co-producer or producer. That relationship has, as he's become more confident, I mean, he's worked with McCartney, Sting, The Police, me, and Genesis. He's obviously got a career on his own, you know, and so he doesn't want to just engineer anymore. So he's obviously becoming more of a producer with other bands, but when he comes back with me, we kind of call it a co-producer. Even though when it's my music, I know how I want it to sound. He'll still come up with opinions. He'll still come up with very interesting ideas, ideas that I take notice of, and I will change the arrangement of a song as a result of an idea of his if I think it's a good idea.
Do it.
That's Phil Collins with Only You Know and I Know from the number one album 30 years ago, No Jacket Required. Coming up next, Phil Collins reveals how his working class background allows him to connect with millions worldwide and how inspiration for a hit can come out of the mouths of babes. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of the Grammy Album of the Year, No Jacket Required, from Phil Collins.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
It's the anniversary of No Jacket Required, the 1985 number one seller and Grammy Album of the Year. Most of the lyrical themes Phil Collins explored on his first three solo albums, including No Jacket Required, had to do with interpersonal relationships. But it would not be long before Collins would use his newly found superstardom to address larger social concerns of poverty, homelessness, and violence.
Well, I think because of my very normal upbringing and that obviously has a knock-on effect in the way you are now, you kind of approach things from a normal standpoint. I consider myself to be a normal human being as opposed to a privileged human being or someone that actually, you know, has earned everything he can to try and avoid those aspects of regular real life. You know, I like to get out in the thick of it, and I can't escape the things that I see on the street and the things that my kids are going through and the, you know, the things you read in the newspapers and the things you see on television. And so it's that normal background that I think enables me to, A, relate in a very simple style lyrically to most people. And also, I begrudge when, and I actually get quite angry when people sort of say, well, he's a rock star. How will he know what's going out on the street? How will he know what it's like to feel homeless? I don't believe you have to be homeless to understand how bad it can be.
Cry, and I believe.
When it comes to the big dilemmas of modern life, Phil does not purport to have all the answers. I asked him the value, then, of posing questions without providing solutions.
A lot of questions aren't answered because not enough people pose the questions. I mean, if enough people actually rattled their cages and said, or did what in Network, Peter Finch, you know, opened their windows and shouted that they're mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore, these questions would have to be addressed. And that, I think, is what I'm trying to do. I mean, you know, if you have homeless people, build more houses. You haven't got enough money to build more houses, then print more money. You know, this is my Chauncey Gardner being there kind of approach to life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes think that sometimes the simple answers are the ones that no one thinks about because they're too simple, and everyone approaches a complicated question with a complicated answer. I don't necessarily think that's necessarily the way we should be.
Feel the same, and I know it's only
yet another number one song from No Jacket Required, Phil Collins with One More Night.
A lot of people, I think, as long as they get from A to B, that's to say their home to their work and back again, without real life touching them, then I think, which is why you see so many people on their own in their cars, they kind of think it's going to go away and it doesn't affect them. Whereas, in fact, if they were to look back over the last, you know, suddenly look back 10 years ago and see how life has changed, it changes so gradually that sometimes you don't realize it.
Right.
I think we have to realize that there are some things going on out there which we have to do a U-turn from. And I think the violence with kids on the streets, when they you see kids out there with now there's the guns, it's like that's their status symbol. You know, it used to be knives, it used to be knuckle dusters and chains, and now it's guns. It's escalating to the point where we have to do something about it. And you would never have dreamed that it would have got to this stage if you had thought 5 years ago, but it actually has got to this stage. And I think we have to, rather than just throw these guys in jail, which is like what some people would suggest, I think we have to stand back and say, let us look at why they have been placed in that situation. I mean, there are always going to be the troublemakers that would do this anyway, but most of the young kids out there, the young adults, would prefer not to be in this situation. And I think they're there because no one listens to them without it.
Thank you.
next, Phil Collins shares his inspiration from the TV news to terrorism at the dinner table. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Phil Collins, the number one seller, Grammy Album of the Year 1985, No Jacket Required.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
Thanks again, buddy. Phil Collins remarried in 1984, and a daughter was later born. Being a parent suddenly forces anyone to look at socially ingrained institutions with a new perspective, and rock stars like Phil Collins are not exempt.
The results of sort of having to turn the television off when we were eating, because of her simplistic way of looking at things, obviously because she's only like 4.5 years old, we'd be eating our dinner at 9 o'clock, which is when the 9 o'clock news comes on in England, and there was all the Kurds and the Gulf-inspired refugees from the Gulf War, and Bosnia was starting, and Bangladesh had a huge
monsoon
flood,
yeah.
You know, all these things were happening, and the news was just one disaster after another, and Lily was just sitting there eating her dinner, and she just sort of stopped and sort of said, why are these babies crying, and why are these people look like that? Why aren't they, you know, what's wrong with this? What's wrong? What's happening? I mean, because it's, you know, she found it very upsetting, we turned it off. You know, it just seemed that there was everything for a period there. All the news was bad, you know.
Phil's alarmed that terrorism reveals a hole in the soul of society. He recalls the Pan Am flight bound for America at Christmas time with hundreds of people traveling home for the holidays that exploded over Lockerbie, Scotland after leaving London.
I often wonder, you know, when you get something like a Lockerbie disaster or a random bombing, when you get lots of people that are casualties, are sort of statistics, just as a result of one person's idea, madman's idea. I mean, I think about how they feel, and also how far are we going to let them go, or how much do they have to do to prove to us, and say us, the government, that we have to address this situation and talk to them, get around the table and talk to them? Because I think it's the kids, it's the innocent mothers and children that are walking past the supermarket when it blows up.
Absolutely.
That I kind of feel is the tragedy here. I mean, sure. Obviously, any human being dying from this kind of event is a tragedy. But I feel that if you're a soldier, you put the uniform on and you buy into this. You know what you're letting yourself in for when you recruit, and you're on your guard. But your average man in the street, the woman, the child, they don't know. They're just going out there to get their Saturday morning shopping. And then, you know, we have a bomb blowing up and killing 9 people. Some of them were kids, and injuring 50 people. And it just seems to me that they're not going to stop. And I can see that they have a point that they want to get over. And the government, out of stubbornness in a way and sort of principles, will not sit down and talk to them because they don't want to bend to terrorism. And I think, meanwhile, people are dying because of it.
From the Grammy Award-winning 1985 Album of the Year, No Jacket Required, that's a concert and audience favorite, Take Me Home, which peaked at number 7 on the charts. Musically, one of the most impressive pieces on No Jacket Required is an instrumental interlude that precedes the melancholy song, We Said Hello, Goodbye. It's both simple and cinematic.
Well, I've been mucking about since I was, you know, early teenager. We had a piano at home and I used to sort of play every now and again. And I gradually taught myself, and as each album comes out, each year goes by, I actually get a bit better. And the piano introduction was kind of an afterthought, actually. I mean, I had the song, and I just thought it'd be nice to set it up with a piano piece. And this was all done at home, you know, so I was really sort of just experimenting on the demos. And I actually just wrote this thing, and I was really pleased with it. It was something I'd never done before.
It's beautiful. Has it been a little intimidating developing your keyboard talent in close proximity to somebody like a Tony Banks of Genesis?
Well, Tony and I are street miles apart as keyboard players. I mean, his tastes and what he listens to. I mean, I'm a real simple chord person. And although he likes simple pop music sometimes, actually, some of his writing is quite complex. And we don't really cross too many roads that we would, you know, our musical tastes don't cross over that much. And what they do, when we do cross, obviously, it becomes a Genesis thing.
We said goodbye to a dear old friend, and we packed our bags and left, feeling sad, it's the only way. We said hello as we turned the key, a new roof over our heads, gave a smile, it's the only way.
Garnering 3 Grammy Awards, including Album of the Year 1985, 7 weeks at number 1 in America, and an estimated worldwide sales of 25 million. That's Phil Collins, No Jacket Required, with We Said Hello, Goodbye. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. I'm Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Phil Collins. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song, Andy Timmons.
Follow In The Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.